It is time for Kaleidoscope on KDOM, and today we get to talk with Liz Stahl with the University of Minnesota Extension Office. Liz, how are you today?
We're doing good.
We appreciate you taking time out and talking with us. You've had a very busy week.
That's right. We had our field school for ag professionals up on the St. Paul campus this week. It's always a great program. It's a couple days. And really, it's a nice opportunity for ag professionals, you know, basically anybody working with farmers to get, you know, some of these people are new to ag, you know, so we give them a good background, hands-on, you know, working with crop production issues, growth and development, you know, insect ID, weed ID, all that stuff, and then kind of going over current issues. So, it was a nice program. A little toasty on our first day. Actually, it was pretty toasty, but then at least it cooled off a little bit yesterday.
And you had good attendance?
Yeah, we had a lot of good turnout from throughout the state, and you know, and that's interesting. You know, when you think about who came from the state, one of the big questions that we covered was looking at soybean aphid. You know, of course, that's always something that we look at in our state every year. You know, we usually have a few soybean aphids out in the field. Sometimes we have pretty big populations. People need a spray, but we don't need a spray every year for soybean aphid. So that, again, was just a topic going over, you know, the background about soybean aphid, why we talk about the threshold so much. And, you know, of course, one of the big reasons for that was just we've got, you know, significant issues with resistance to one of the major chemistries that control soybean aphid, typically the pyrethroids. So that would be like warrior bifenthrin. Those are following that pyrethroid chemistry. And we're not the only state that has seen issues with this either. Other states are reporting resistant populations. So that just creates more challenges in controlling soybean aphid. And some people, you know, they're looking at now doing mixes to address that. But the thing is, if you're mixing a pyrethroid, which, you know, if it doesn't work in that population, it's not helping you out in that mix. You know, if you're still relying on one chemistry to control the soybean aphid, and, you know, we don't want to be burning out those other chemistries either. So we just got to be real careful if we don't overuse the chemistries that we have. But that was just a big topic.
So what, if they're becoming more and more resistant, what do you recommend as far as management?
Well, you know, yeah, great question. You know, the biggest thing is, hey, don't spray if you don't need to, you know, and, you know, that's using the economic threshold. And that threshold, many years now, that I can probably say it in my sleep. A lot of people can probably say it in their sleep, too, because we've been talking about it for many years. But the research continues to back that up. We don't hurt yield when we, you know, wait until we reach that economic threshold. You know, before we make an application, you don't want to be making applications before you hit that threshold, because you might not have ever needed to make an application. So that means you're making an unnecessary one that can help encourage resistance. That's a greater cost. Might set you up to have to make another application when only one might have done it. So again, that threshold, it's once you hit 250 aphids on average per plant, with at least 80% of the plants having aphids and that population increasing, then we're saying, hey, odds are that population is going to continue to build where you might impact yield. Doesn't mean it will continue to build, but the odds are looking there that the natural predators are getting overwhelmed. So, you know, big thing there is to use that threshold. And then another thing is, you know, we do have some other options now. You know, we've got like Safina, Savanto, Transform. Those are some of the newer products that have come, you know, to the table now, and they are, you know, more specific for sucking insects like aphids, so they're not that broad-spectrum type insecticide, so they should be friendlier for our natural predators, leaving those, like ladybugs, for example. They do a lot of nice work for us, you know, on insect populations, so we don't, you know, we want to leave them alone, let them do their job, and also, you know, some of these, too, aren't, you know, don't have as big of an impact on pollinators either, So that's a big thing, you know, following those thresholds. And then look at some of these other products, too, you know, if you do reach that threshold to make that application. You know, and chlorpyrifos, you know, Lorsban was one of those products that has lost the, you know, we don't have a label for that right now, but there's some other products that have that as an active ingredient. That's another option too, but again, we still don't have a big wide list of products to use, so we want to preserve the ones that we've got if we need to make those applications.
So, dumb question, but are we kind of in the meat of the season for aphids, or are we kind of at the beginning of it or the end of it, or where is there a point where for the season it's kind of done, or is it ongoing?
That's a great question. Yeah, we're kind of getting into that time where they start, those populations start to build, you know, and once we get to that R5 stage, you know, again, still the threshold, we use a threshold through that's beginning seed, and then once we hit R6, that's the full seed. Now we reach, you know, maximum dry matter production, you know, once we get into that, up to that R6, well, up until we get physiological maturity, that's R7, but through R6, which we haven't really, you know, we shouldn't really have many soybeans at that point yet, but at that point, then we figure the plants can handle a higher level of soybean aphid pressure. So you're right, it's once we get around this later part of July and into August, you know, that's kind of been when prime time for aphids, you know, around up to maybe mid-August. It depends on the season. We can't really look at a calendar date. We've got to look at the stage of the soybeans because, again, once we get into that later R6 stage, you know, then it doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really pay to spray at that point anymore, you
right.
know. But we want to be scouting for sure up through R5, you know, and into early R6, so we don't have these, you know, a really high population that could impact yield. But, you know, I think our biggest problem is people spraying too early, you know, and then if they're using a broad spectrum product, they're wiping out the natural predators, they might be buying themselves another application when maybe one was all they needed, and they might not have needed any either. You know, again, it's just something, I don't, it's no fun to scout, but it really is the best management practice to do.
Right. Okay, so a lot of discussion about the soybean aphids. What else did you talk about at the school?
Yeah, tar spot, that was another big issue too. Of course, that's a newer, you know, disease in corn in the state too. And this year we have gotten some reports now, some counties here in southwestern Minnesota where we have had, you know, at least one field where it's been confirmed that tar spot is out there. And right now, you know, at this time here when I'm talking to you, you know, Dean Melvick, who's our extension plant pathologist, he said basically, you know, the levels are low enough and there's not enough plants, you know, impacted in the field yet that, you know, what he's seen and heard about, you know, are at low levels yet, not, you know, not at the stage where, hey, you'd want to get out there and spray a fungicide. And I know a lot of people are concerned about this disease, but historically, especially in our part of the state, this disease has come on later on in the season and a low enough level that it doesn't have an impact on yield. But we got to keep an eye on it. So that's what we want to do. And he's talked to people that kind of pulled the trigger really early, you know, made some fungicide applications early on in the season. Well, you know, they're only active for so long. And if you apply too early, that active ingredient is going to be at too low a level when the disease actually does start to come, you know, on in the field. So then now they're looking at having to make another application because they're starting to see, you know, some tar spot out there. But again, right now he's not aware of, you know, fields that are at a high enough level yet, but it's certainly something we want to keep on the radar. And he also does encourage if somebody does find it out in their field, hey, let us know. You know, there's this website, this IPM pipe. It does record what counties tar spot has been confirmed. It does just help us track that disease because, again, we're still learning a lot about it. We know it overwinters in corn residue, but we also know that it's spread not just by corn residue but by spores that just in the wind. So it spread quite a bit last year. Again, low levels over most of the fields in this area, but the inoculum's out there. So if we've got a, you know, a sensitive hybrid and we got the right environmental conditions, you know, could build up to a problem where at a level where it could be an issue.
But if your neighbor's field has some tar spots, is it it's safe to assume that it's going to be in your field before too long?
You know, I remember in the fall when we were scouting, and I saw it in more fields than I had before. Again, it was really late in the season, and then I'm like, how is this spreading? But then you think of those really windy days, and you just see all this corn residue blowing. You're like, that's probably one way how it's spreading, you know, and then the, you know, spores just are airborne. So probably a lot of fields have a little, you know, knocking them out there, but, you know, that's one thing too, just a management tactic is what kind of hybrid are you planting out there? More seed companies are, you know, really doing a lot of work to breed for tolerance or, you know, resistance to tar spot. So that's something you want to be looking at too. Because he has had cases that I know it overwinters in corn residue, but it's popping up in fields where they never saw it before. So it's being introduced somehow. It's likely something we're probably going to see, hopefully not at a high level. Typically with corn diseases, we have not seen them at, again, you know, high enough level that they impact yield or, you know, early enough in the season that they'd have an impact on yield. Not saying that never happens, but usually they haven't. So that's one thing we got on our side versus, say, you know, if we were further south, you know, a state further south where they do deal with diseases, you know, having more of a yield impact.
Right. So are there other recommendations that you have for management?
Yeah, good question. Right now he's kind of saying, hey, if you're seeing, you know, consistently like 5 to 10 lesions on 2 leaves per plant or more on a large number of plants in the field, and the corn is tasseling to the milk stage, and the forecast is for disease development, you know, then a fungicide application, you know, may be justified. And a good timing window is like the tassel to R2. That's kind of optimal. And you want to lean towards the later end of that window, too, just because if you apply it too early, you know, and then the disease comes on later, that active ingredient level may be too low to really have an impact on tar spot. But he does get into more details about this. We had this as a topic of our strategic farming program on July 23rd, and we do have a Minnesota Crop News that went out on July 24th about this. So I do encourage people to check that out on our website if they weren't able to attend that program live. So you can find out more details, kind of the latest, what the research is showing.
Very good. Well, it sounds like there was a lot of good information at the field school.
Yeah, it's a really great program. It was fun to be a part of it. Again, a little toasty that first day, yeah. But but you know, we made it through, and just drink lots of water and stay in the shade as much as you can. But a lot of good topics, and you know, that's the thing. We've got some other programs coming up here. Want to put in a plug? We've got our strategic farming field notes. We've just got 2 episodes left now for this growing season. It's hard to believe we're getting into August. August 6th we'll have soybean aphid and corn insects, or I should say soybean insects and corn insects, but soybean aphid will be one of them. That'll be the topic of discussion there, you know, looking at corn rootworm and corn borer, for example, as well. So, again, that'll be on August 6th from 8 to 8:30, and then we'll have one last session on August 13th, same time. And again, we do thank the Minnesota Soybean Research and Promotion Council and the Minnesota Corn Research and Promotion Council for sponsoring that program, so we can offer that at no cost. But we do have recordings of all those sessions, and then we do write-ups of those as well. So you can find that all on our Extension Crops website. So make sure you check that out. We'll have, we'll be gearing up for winter programs soon too, which is hard to believe.
But. Right. In the same sentence, you're saying 100 degree heat and getting ready for winter.
I know, that's kind of crazy.
All right. Liz, anything else we need to mention today?
I just encourage people, if they're seeing any strange issue out there, hey, give us a holler. I know we've had some people wondering about herbicide-resistant weeds. Our extension weed scientist, Evelyn Sarangi, is particularly interested to see, you know, he's checking out populations if they're resistant to glufosinate. That's the active ingredient in Liberty. That's something we still have to do in the greenhouse. It takes a long process. But again, you could help out everybody in the state by figuring out, you know, do we really have it in the state? You know, how, if we do, you know, where are we seeing issues? So that's one thing. Or, you know, resistance to these different pests, you know, be it diseases or insects, you know, hey, let us know. And, yeah, you might be, we might want to, you know, use some of those insects or weeds as part of a research program, or, you know, it'd be good for you to find out what's going on in your own field too.
Definitely. All right. Well, Liz, we appreciate you talking with us today.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You bet. We'll talk to you next month.
Sounds great.
That will do it for Kaleidoscope this morning on KDOM.